Hey, and welcome to Reporting In. I'm your host, Malcolm Fleschner. Reporting In is TYT's show dedicated to investigative journalism reporting. We talk to reporters and journalists working both for TYT and outside the TYT fold. Find out the stories they're covering right now, stories they're planning on covering, get their assessment of the political landscape. And today, I'm super excited because we have a return guest her name's Emma Vigeland. You know her and love her, of course. She was with TYT Politics, the artist formerly known as TYT Politics. Now it's Rebel Headquarters. She's the producer and host of Rebel Headquarters. And Emma, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Malcolm.
This is like the third time you're here. We're gonna get it right this time, I'm sure. But last time the audio was terrible, so I'm hopeful that this time will be better on audio alone. And there's a lot I want to talk to you about. You're based in New York, so you're sort of in the midst of the fray of the New York primary, which by the time this airs will be over, so the viewers know more than we do about the outcome anyway. But I still want to talk to you about some of the way the New York primary season has shaped up, and then look forward to the larger the general election. But before that, I want to talk to you about your recent intrepid adventure. You put on your pith helmet and you ventured into the belly of the beast and went to a Trump rally. Or was it multiple Trump rallies or just the one?
I've been to two at this point, and I would say the first one that was, went semi-virally. I think the Facebook video got like 2 to 3 million views, which is a lot for us. I mean, the main show, they get it all the time. But that was in Florida. That was way more intense than the one I went to, which was in Indiana, the second one.
Okay, so Florida was crazier than Indiana. That's not to be expected, I suppose. And what exactly did your coverage of, it was one rally in Florida. We'll talk about Florida for the most part. What did it consist of? You interviewed people outside beforehand, and then you were there for the rally itself, I assume, also?
Yeah, so we tried to cover a Montana rally before this Florida one, and our press credentials got denied when I put down the Young Turks. I guess this is a little bit of insider information, but when I put down TYT Network, they kind of let us into the Florida rally, and I guess they might have regretted that a little bit because the video did extremely well. I interviewed supporters outside, and then as I was in the rally, we filmed him speaking. And we filmed a protester get dragged out as well in the kind of chaotic scene. So it's, I think, some interesting coverage. And what I think struck a lot of people, I've had a lot of people talk to me about my coverage and what they thought was that, yeah, they had that crazy guy that said liberals and Islam sucks with an apostrophe on his T-shirt. That's the kind of caricature of a Trump supporter that you would see. But there was this soccer mom that people, my family and friends, when they spoke to me about it, said was even more disturbing to them because she thought that the kids being brought over and being detained at the border, the families being separated, that they could be decoys, possibly, fake children being given to these parents, fake parents by cartel members, et cetera, like absolutely Looney Tunes, Alex Jones, dangerous stuff. And so there was a wide range of people, the crazy people, a guy screaming in my face and getting in my face, to the soccer mom who was very lovely. I had a grandma say, "Oh, I just love you," after my coverage. And I wanted to be like, "Lady, you don't know where this is. You don't know TYT. You don't know how the audience is going to receive this." But So
was this your first time visiting a Trump rally, at least since the presidency? Since you won?
Yes, sorry, these automatic lights just went off, but we'll see if they go on. This was my first time at a Trump rally, yes.
Okay, and
since he's won.
So I find it interesting that they would give you credentials when you just said TYT, but not the Young Turks. Did anybody in the audience or people that you spoke to or even saw you, did they recognize TYT? Because I assume you had TYT on your microphone, right?
No, I took off the flag. For my own personal safety, to be honest with you, that's kind of what I was concerned with that. And I did also want to get people to talk to me, people that normally wouldn't. But when asked, if they asked me directly where I worked, I would say TYT. Most people that I spoke with had no idea, but I, especially at the Indiana rally, there was a guy that got in my face, clearly InfoWars fan. And then, I had younger men, especially were very wary of speaking to me and would pull their friends away if they were going to come speak to me. So TYT is not well known amongst the elderly and the middle age, but well known even amongst young Trump supporters.
Well, that's why I think we should send Ben Mankiewicz to these things, because the elderly know and love him from his work on Turner Classic Movies. But that's a separate issue I can take up with management. So, I watched as many of, I think all the videos that came out of those rallies, and one thing I was struck by, as you point out, is there really is a range from the people that we would identify as crazies who are spouting these conspiracy theories that are so far-fetched and outlandish that it's hard to believe that anybody finds them remotely compelling, to other people who seem relatively knowledgeable about the issues of the day and seem to have a relatively well-reasoned arguments for their support for Trump. And that's compared to the people who say, you ask them what they like about what Trump's doing. They're like, well, he's good on jobs and he's good on the border, and that, you know, just vague and don't really know anything. And they're probably just, you know, they're not particularly well informed and don't care to be, but they hear from their friends or from Trump's Twitter account. I don't know what their sources are. So is that what you were expecting, or, you know, how are your expectations different from what you actually encountered?
My expectations were pretty aligned with what I encountered. I knew that based on the way I look, I'm white and I'm a young woman, that I wouldn't receive a ton of pushback. I think people just didn't assume that I would be a liberal, progressive, you know, gotcha. I wasn't trying to get them, but a reporter that was coming out there, that was smiling at them, that was asking them straightforward questions. They ended up saying ridiculous things, but I really made an effort to make sure that I was asking fair questions, straightforward questions that were not misleading in any way, that wasn't trying to be gotcha, as Sarah Palin would say. So, I think that people were especially nice to me based on the way I look. Like, I kind of look preppy too, so that helped. But I guess the one thing that did surprise me, though, was that at least in the Trump rally in Florida, people were tailgating it. There were a lot of drunk people.
I guess that's Florida again, though. I mean, you combine Florida and Trump support, and the idea that
you just don't see. I mean, I've been to Bernie Sanders rallies. I've been to the very sparsely attended Hillary Clinton rallies. Of course, other political rallies. People are not tailgating them.
Yeah, well, I mean, they are, but it's an unusual phenomenon. So it's you know, hard to say what the presidential rally, when it's not, you know, the presidential campaign is not underway. It's an unusual thing for Trump to be doing this, so I guess you're going to get that kind of response. I guess I'm wondering, is it difficult for you to, because I've seen the coverage from the mainstream media, and it seems a little bit like there's this constant. Do Trump supporters, do they still support Trump even after all of his lies and all of our reporting about the terrible things he's said and done? And it's a little bit like they're anthropologists going and researching some exotic tribe, then reporting back to civilization. Is it hard not to have that kind of attitude, or is that just because the mainstream media is so out of touch?
Well, when you're there, you're just talking to regular human beings. And, you know, I have conservative friends, I have conservative family. It's kind of a similar vibe, except for the fact that, you know, there is that hostility because you're a member of the media. So that adds an extra layer of, I guess, unease. I do feel guilt, honestly, that the people that I speak with are going to be, there's going to be a segment on the main show, which has 4 million subscribers. And, you know, Cenk and Anna are going to talk about what they said. And these people have no idea that that's, you know, what's going to go down, because they don't know what TYT is. And they don't know the breadth of the audience. And they don't know how many people watch. So I guess that's really honest, admission that I do feel some guilt about that. But at the same time, they are coming up to me, they are willing to speak with me. They are saying these things without me cornering them in any way. So they're kind of stepping into it.
They know, they've heard that you're an enemy of the people. They've heard that. So right. They should know what they're getting into, that you're just there to destroy America and to undermine everything that they hold dear, and maybe force them to change gender.
Right, yeah. I mean, I go in there and I hand out pamphlets saying why you must be transgender, and then I leave.
Yeah. So how much, you know, how do you define what is fair, a fair question? Because some of the sometimes you ask them a question and then they, you know, people will be spouting just nonsense. And how much do you think it's fair to come back at them and say, well, what do you feel about this? Or how do you, when you acknowledge that X is happening, how do you feel about, you know, border separations and all that sort of thing? How do you draw that line? Or do you just sort of do it in the moment and, you know, feel whatever feels right?
I kind of do it in the moment, but every time when I'm speaking to them, I lead in with, why are you here today and why you support Donald Trump? And then I gauge what issues are near and dear to them and what they care about. And sometimes I'll go in with a specific topic. Like the last time, I was interested in what people had to say about the NFL protests, because I think, you know, obviously I'm a huge football fan, and I think that the social issues and the protests that are going on there, it's just such a microcosm of the narrative and the discussion around police brutality and racism in the country. And it's just such a great way to gauge how these Trump supporters feel about that. So I came in with that question saying, how do you feel about the kneeling? And I got disgusting responses for the most part. So I will sometimes push back. You know, I spoke to one Black Trump supporter who was just talking about how he's never encountered police in Indiana that were, you know, that were hostile towards him. He's never been beaten up by police. And I just had to push back then. I was like, oh, so because it hasn't happened personally to you, it's never happened to anyone else. That there's a limit that I hit, but I find it a little obnoxious and preening when these, you know, self-righteous reporters go into Trump country and say that, you know, they work for a liberal outlet and they just go there to debate and show how much more they know than the people there. That's not my role. I don't think it's, you know, I'm not a crusader. I'm just here to kind of get a general gist of what people are thinking. And, you know, the hardcore Trump rally people, the people that are attending those rallies, tend to be the most misinformed, and that's really what I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the inclination is to say, oh, look at these Trump supporters, they don't know anything. But in reality, the majority of Americans don't pay close attention to politics and don't really, you just watch any sort of, you know, The Tonight Show, Jay Leno used to exploit that to a comic effect. And when you stop people on the street randomly, they often don't know very basic things about American history or the government or politics. So I think that's the kind of thing that we want to paint Trump supporters with that brush, but it's really across the board. We're in a bubble ourselves because we're so involved in politics and talk about it all the time. So I feel that is, if anything, I can't believe I'm saying this, unfair to them. But I want to talk about also, well, one other thing I wanted to point out that I observed is an important lesson for all you Cub reporters out there when you're interviewing people, is never let the person you're interviewing take the microphone. Because there was one interview you did with the woman and she grabbed the microphone from you and then getting it back, boy, good luck. Because she had a lot to say. And I don't know how long that took. I only saw an edited version, but it could have, you know, you might have needed to use like the jaws of life to get that thing out of her hands.
Well, she was drunk, right? So that was one of the drunk people. There was another woman that took my microphone where I was like, you smell like my nail polish remover. Your breath smells like a nail salon. It is that pungent. So yeah, there were a lot of drunk people, and there's a high correlation of people that take microphones with alcohol consumption. So
I'm gonna have to drop a chart and we'll see how that looks. I'm sure you're right about that. But that it's difficult because they just grab it out of your hands. Anyway, what about inside? One thing I noticed about inside the rally, specifically, I want to ask you about. They had the protester who was led out and amid people chanting and screaming at her, and she, I think, was wearing a hijab, correct?
Yeah. So it was hard for me to see. I was in the media pit where, you know, which was in the center of everything. And she was in the crowd closer to the front. And I couldn't exactly see what went down, but she was taken out by security. What I found most interesting about the Indiana rally was when we were interviewing supporters outside. We didn't get press credentials for that, by the way.
Right.
The second rally that I attended. When we were interviewing supporters outside, there was this semi-Orwellian kind of audio message that was being played on the loudspeaker, and my cameraman Steve was able to get parts of it, but it basically went like this. President Trump, as you know, is a big supporter of the First Amendment and holds it very dear. That said, there are disruptors and agitators who want to take away from his message and all he's doing to make America great again. So please, it was basically a discouraging message. I'm paraphrasing, but it was in this like Hunger Games-esque female clear voice over the loudspeaker, and you see beneath where it's playing, there's a screen and it's just a picture of him like saluting the crowd or waving to the crowd in some way. And I'm like, oh my Lord, this is authoritarian light.
That is a little spooky. I know you couldn't see the incident, but do you know what the woman who was let out of the Florida rally was chanting, or she was screaming? Was it before Trump came on, or was it while he was already on?
While he was on, and it had to do with the family separation policy.
Now, I'm going to get a little conspiracy theory on you. Watching it, I thought to myself, that looks like it's staged. It looks fake to me. Like this is a woman that the Trump administration or whoever was organizing the rally, paid her, dressed her up, and then had her say things. Because the way the crowds were reacting, and it just seemed like a real effective way of getting them amped and riled up, and just like getting those veins throbbing in their foreheads, which is sort of like what Trump is trying to do. And it just seemed phony to me. Did you get that sense, or do you think it just seemed authentic to you?
It was authentic, I believe. That wasn't the story that I was there, that I ended up covering when I got there, because one, I didn't really get a good glimpse of it. And also I was more focused on what the supporters were having to say. So, but I know that there were reporters there that I was chatting with in the media pen who did write about it. I just can't remember exactly the specifics of the story. So, there's a time and place for conspiracy theories, but I would not say that this is an accurate one of them.
I still have my suspicion. Well, that's a great thing about a conspiracy theory. The more it gets debunked, the more I just believe in it. So there's nothing you can say. Obviously, you're in on it. You're part of you're a mole for the Trump administration, and you're lying for them. I've found you out. So, all right, well, I encourage all viewers to go back and check out those videos, because it's really interesting. And I do get frustrated with the mainstream media for this whole attitude. Like, do Trump supporters still support Trump even after all the things? Because nobody did that after Obama was elected. Nobody in 2009, 2010 were going around and finding out if Obama supporters still supported him, even though he put Wall Street bankers in, key cabinet positions, and he immediately started backtracking on a lot of his campaign promises. So, I feel like there's a double standard there, and it reflects sort of this insider media bias that they don't understand or believe that anybody could support Trump. So these people have to have their eyes open. And there's an element of that I believe too, because Donald Trump I find implausible as a charismatic leader, because he seems to have no charisma. But that aside, I do encourage people to go watch the videos and see for themselves what they think. And I would definitely watch the video of the woman being pulled out of the rally, and whether that seems a little suspicious to you, although Emma buys into it. So, but what I want to move on to is the New York State primary situation. And this has been a really interesting season, beginning really with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her stunning win. And now we have down to the wire, as we're recording this on the day before the primary, we have what was supposed to be an easy cakewalk for Andrew Cuomo, which has turned into just a shit show for him, if I may say so. I apologize for my language. The whole week, basically, it's just been bad news after bad news after bad news. So even though the viewers know who won and what happened, what do you think about the emergence of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cynthia Nixon, Zephyr Teachout, and what that says about New York politics, and whether politics as usual can prevail in New York from here on?
So I have so many thoughts about this, and obviously the viewers will know now who ended up winning. I'm going to just do a bold prediction, see if I'm right. So right now, polls have Cynthia Nixon at around 23% to 22%, which is a huge deficit, a 40-ish point deficit to Andrew Cuomo. back in 2014, Zephyr Teachout, who's now running for attorney general, and I think that she's likely to win, or I hope that she wins, she got around 32 to 33%. So this means that with all this national media attention, the polls are saying that Cynthia Nixon will lose to Andrew Cuomo in an incredibly with an incredibly energized electorate by 10 points less than when Zephyr Teachout ran in 2014, when there was no enthusiasm and no one showing up. That screams, that just doesn't sit right to me. So mm-hmm. I really do believe that Cynthia Nixon will not win, unfortunately, but I think that she's going to get at 40% of the electorate, and she's going to get 40% of the vote because her strategy was to focus on New York City. I think she will do incredibly well in New York City, and I think that will carry her to get around 40%, which is way better than the pollsters are saying. So that's my bold prediction, and we can see if I'm right, and the viewers will see when they watch this.
We can just edit it all out and replace the name Cynthia Nixon with Andrew Cuomo, or with the percentages, and change the names around to make it. So don't worry about that. You predict whatever you like.
That's a conspiracy theory for the audience, right? They're just
This will also be edited out.
All of Cenk's predictions were just edited, so that's why he's right all the time. So, I don't think Cynthia Nixon will win. There's a weird stigma here. She's an actress. She has no experience. And Andrew Cuomo is so entrenched in the Democratic establishment here. Joe Biden just endorsed him. Hillary Clinton endorsed him early on. And Hillary Clinton's pretty popular here, even though she's not popular throughout the country. Joe Biden is still incredibly popular. So I think he will win despite his numerous corruption scandals, the fact that he sent out an extraordinarily insulting mailer accusing Cynthia Nixon of anti-Semitism, basically, for her support of the BDS movement. So that's unfortunate. Andrew Cuomo is as centrist and corporatist and as much of a bully as you can get. I mean, on the Democratic side, he has a lot of Trump in him when he bullies his opponents and really bullies the people around him. So he'll be the next governor, I believe, but, that's unfortunate. Zephyr Teachout is one of my favorite politicians in the country. She has lost twice now for public office. She lost to Andrew Cuomo in the governor's race in the primary in 2014, as I mentioned. And in 2016, she lost to Representative Sasso, a Republican, by a slim margin because, she was favored to win in that New York district to represent that New York district in Congress, Orange County, a lot of places in New York. But that area actually went for Trump, surprisingly. So she lost because Hillary Clinton lost there. So I think that the third time might be the charm for her. I remember reading her book in college where she was arguing for campaign finance reform incredibly intelligently. She's a law professor. She writes about corruption. I mean, she was against corruption and was for reforming our campaign finance system before Bernie made it cool. So I think Zephyr Teachout would be a fantastic attorney general. And Jumaane Williams is running for lieutenant governor, and he has a lot of progressive support behind him. I know less about his campaign, but he's been a progressive activist for a very long time, and he has less of a chance than Zephyr, but a better chance than Cynthia. I think they'll be very close for that race, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, Andrew Cuomo, it would be delightful if he were to lose because he is sort of the epitome of the worst of corporate Democrats. He is a bully. I love that the New York Times had what I would call a scathing endorsement of him. I'm sure you read it where they listed all his myriad faults and how horrible he is on all these various fronts and then still said that we should elect him because Cynthia Nixon is inexperienced. So I guess we'll just find out. We're almost out of time, and I'm sorry we don't. I'd love to talk to you more about New York. So, but what happens if just briefly is even if Cuomo does win, he's been talked about a lot as a 2020 potential presidential candidate. Does this campaign, is this a real chink in his armor and the potential that he has for to grow, to take a larger office in the future? Because it seems like there's been a lot of hits that he's taken during this campaign, and they're hard to recover from.
Absolutely. So Andrew Cuomo has been exposed by Cynthia Nixon, and even if she loses, which she likely will, that's the service that she's done for the American people and for Democratic primary voters leading up to 2020. Andrew Cuomo says that he's for single-payer health care, but he's allowed for an independent Democratic caucus, the IDC, to basically side with the Republicans, make sure that no, you know, they have control of what legislation goes to the floor, make sure that no progressive legislation gets through. Andrew Cuomo's associates have been convicted, multiple associates, of corruption charges, bribery charges. The guy won't legalize marijuana. He says he's stopping fracking, but is allowing fracked gas pipelines to come through New York State. I mean, he's as centrist as it gets. And New York, besides California, is the biggest blue state in the country. And it's an outrage that he has been this kind of governor in this state. So I think now a greater majority of people are aware of that record. And that's thanks to Cynthia Nixon, the kind of aggressive campaign that she's run.
All right. Well, whatever does happen, thank you, Emma. I really do appreciate your talking to us and telling me about your visits. Are you going to make any more trips into Trump country, or is that it for you?
Definitely. I mean, I know that Cenk wants to put the pedal to the metal and cover some more Trump rallies. So
yeah, let's see him go himself. Let's see him go in person.
I don't know. I
feel put like you in the line people. Of fire. That's not quite fair, but I'm sure he's busy with other things. All right, so hopefully we'll get you. You can report back to us and also on Rebel Headquarters. Check out Emma's work on Rebel Headquarters, her YouTube channel. She's a sole proprietor and does a great job with it, and so I encourage you to check it out. The rest of you, thank you so much for watching and reporting in. I appreciate your viewership. You get this show before everybody else. You members get the show before anyone else. It's made public on YouTube. I hope you appreciate it. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you next time on Reporting In.